In a closely divided North Carolina, America's ninth largest state, politics has taken a dangerous turn, moving from the campaign trail to the court bench. Little known to the public, four state Supreme Court justices are considering a legal maneuver that threatens the credibility and viability of the state's highest court for decades to come. Two constitutional amendments, 9.6 million votes, and the fate of two duly elected Supreme Court justices hang in the balance. The Wall Street Journal calls it scorched earth judging, writing that if successful, this institutional mischief will reverberate far beyond North Carolina. How did we get here? And where are we going? And will raw partisan politics alter the courts for generations, throwing our constitutional order into chaos? Reported by the Carolina Journal and produced by the John Locke Foundation, I am your host, Dallas Woodhouse, and this is Extreme Injustice. Welcome back to Extreme Injustice. I'm John Locke Foundation and Carolina Journal's investigative political analyst, Dallas Woodhouse. Joining me again is my friend in adult supervision, Mitch Kokai. Mitch, you and I have just finished watching the oral arguments over redistricting, new maps that were passed by the legislature for the state house, the state senate, and the congressional delegation late last year. The 4-3 Democrat Supreme Court expedited a lower court trial and hearings in front of the state Supreme Court, in my mind, to try to throw the maps out intentionally for the benefit of Democrats. But tell us how we got here and where we are.
Well, as you mentioned, Dallas, the General Assembly passed new maps, had to pass new maps because of new census data. This is something that's required every time the U.S. Census comes out with its new data every 10 years. So there are new maps for all 50 seats for the state Senate, all 120 seats in the state House, and now 14 North Carolina seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. We gained a seat because of the population growth over the previous decade. And no one was shocked that as soon as the General Assembly approved those maps, in fact, before the maps were even approved, opponents went to court to try to say, no, these are maps that are overly partisan gerrymandered, or in some cases, racially gerrymandered. So the case went before a three-judge panel, because any redistricting case as part of state law has to go before a three-judge panel appointed by the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court. One of the judges is from Wake County, one has to be from Eastern North Carolina, one from Western North Carolina. In this case, it was a bipartisan panel, two Republicans, one Democrat. Those who opposed the maps initially wanted to get candidate filing blocked and to have the maps blocked until the whole thing could be decided. The judges in the three-judge panel said, no, we don't think you've made your case. We're not going to block filing. So after the judges denied a preliminary injunction, the critics of the maps went straight to the Supreme Court and said, hey, you got to do something about this. Step in. Actually, it was before that. We went to the Court of Appeals and had different rulings from the Court of Appeals. Then the state Supreme Court jumps in and says, wait a minute, we're going to stop candidate filing. This was in December after candidate filing had already started. The state Supreme Court stepped in, stopped candidate filing after 2.5 days. Pushed the primary date back. It was scheduled for March 8th, got pushed back from March 8th to May 17th. Then they came up with a very quick timeline. This was before Christmas this happened. The court said, three-judge panel, you're going to have to come back. You're going to have a trial. We want you to have a ruling by January 11th. And remember, we learned about this before Christmas. So we knew it was going to be a very tight timeline. The three-judge panel held the hearing at the trial. It basically took less than 4 days, came out with a ruling, 260-page ruling that basically said, yes, we agree with the plaintiffs that there was intentional pro-Republican districting. But after having all of those findings, we also say that there's nothing within the state's political history or within our constitutional precedents, text or the precedents, anything that we've ever had in more than 200 years that says that there's anything wrong with what the General Assembly did so that the map should be thrown out. So that ruling came out. Case goes back to the state Supreme Court, as you just mentioned, after hundreds, maybe thousands of pages of briefings in this case. The Supreme Court had heard the oral arguments and now will await a decision about what they're going to do with the maps.
Now, why do I think this is likely going to be another extreme injustice? You know, I'm a conservative. I used to work for the state Republican Party. We all know that for over 100 years, up until 2011, Democrats controlled redistricting and drew districts as they saw fit. They were challenged sometimes on whether they followed the federal constitution. And in the early 2000s, there was a decision known as the Stevenson case, Stevenson 1, Stevenson 2, that reestablished the North Carolina Constitution's whole county provision, saying that you have to keep counties whole as possible. But, you know, those were texts in the Constitution, federal law. Here, there's nothing in the state Constitution about partisan gerrymandering. And, you know, I think Republicans are worried about the rules changing on them. There's a couple of other points that I want to bring up. One, the preliminary injunction to stop candidate filing itself was concerning because normally you have to meet a high burden to do that. And that requires showing a substantial likelihood of victory. Well, of course, no court that would have been impossible to prove because no court in North Carolina had ever struck down maps, or at least no appellate court had ever struck down maps based on them being too political. And so that was a concern. The expedited hearings, you know, feel like a partisan sham, if you will, to get the case to the Supreme Court and have the Democrats on the Supreme Court work their will. So there's just a couple of other things I want to bring up this. You know, one is, if you sit there and you think about what is fair, what do I think is fair, right? Well, nobody knows what's fair. What you think is fair, and what somebody else thinks is fair to them. You know, a lot of people say, well, I mean, Democrats come close to winning a majority of statewide votes in certain races, and they still have, you know, very small margins in the congressional delegation and in the state legislature. Well, that is the nature, as we have discussed, of North Carolina's political geography, of that Democrats are highly concentrated in Durham, in Mecklenburg, in Wake counties, you know, some in Guilford. And so what the Supreme Court is confronting here is having to draw a line between permissible partisan considerations. And let's be clear, you could never have a ruling, in my opinion, that said you can't have any partisan considerations because every decision you make has partisan implications. So it would be impossible to ever have a map that it would ever pass court muster because somebody would ever say, well, you know, they considered partisanship. So the court would have to draw a distinction between permissible partisan considerations and extreme partisan gerrymandering that would be unconstitutional. The lower court in North Carolina said that is impossible. On the federal level, the U.S. Supreme Court said that drawing that standard is impossible.
And not for lack of trying, because the Supreme Court at the federal level opened the door back in the 60s to this idea that perhaps there could be some overly partisan gerrymandering that would render a map unconstitutional. And for decades, the people who were challenging this tried to come up with some sort of clear standard that the U.S. Supreme Court could adopt. And there were enough justices on the U.S. Supreme Court who were open to the idea that it could have happened if they could have come up with a good standard. But at this point, the federal court has washed its hands of the issue because they've said, look, there is no clear standard. There's no way that a judge is going to be able to decide this. It is a political question. We're not going to deal with it anymore. They did say that states could deal with the issue. But as we heard in the oral arguments, one of the things they said was the state Supreme Court could deal with this issue, but they looked at Florida, where there was a state constitutional provision against using partisanship in drawing maps. So a state Supreme Court could interpret something that's actually in the Constitution, not like in North Carolina, where they're trying to use things like elections will be free, or people will have equal protection of the laws, and try to
things. The things the plaintiffs have tried to pick out, the free elections clause, the right to free speech. If you rely on these things that are not specific at all, then you could find anything under the sun to be constitutional or unconstitutional, and that is not good constitutional governance. You are more, and courts generally rely on things that are more specific and more on point, and in this case, it is that the legislature shall draw districts, and that power is unquestioned. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk more about how throwing out these districts would be an extreme injustice, and we're going to give you our initial impressions on the oral arguments on redistricting right after this.
Extreme Injustice, an investigative project of Carolina Journal, is produced by the John Locke Foundation. For three decades, Locke has served as an independent, nonprofit think tank that works for truth, freedom, and the future of North Carolina. Locke envisions a strong North Carolina committed to individual freedom, personal responsibility, and limited constitutional government. To support our work, please visit johnlocke.org. Carolina Journal is your source for news and commentary covering politics and public policy. As a project of the John Locke Foundation, Carolina Journal is a pioneer in nonprofit investigative journalism. Our work has exposed corruption, conflicts of interest, and misuse of taxpayer funds by public officials, including members of Congress and the state legislature. Now, our attention is squarely focused on the North Carolina Supreme Court with our in-depth investigative series, Extreme Injustice. Visit carolinajournal.com to learn more.
Welcome back. I'm Dallas Woodhouse with Mitch Kokot. Mitch, we heard oral arguments today, and they followed very much with the written materials that have been submitted to the court. The Republicans' line on this is, you know, there's nothing in the Constitution that prevents this, that partisan considerations have always been a part of this. They point out that it's impossible for them not to be because it is a political process. And how does one go into a political process and say, how much politics is too much politics? There's no really way to do that. The plaintiffs, you know, all liberal-leaning groups, the League of Conservation Voters and these...
Common Cause,
all these groups that are basically front groups for the Democrat Party, my words, not Mitch, they basically are asking for a proportional representation standard to say, hey, if Democrats win a certain amount of votes on a statewide basis, they ought to turn into a certain amount of seats. Now they denied that in the court hearing when it took place, but it's clear that's what they were asking for. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, can the court devise a standard?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. And the main reason that the folks who want some sort of standard will deny that they want proportional representation is that courts have been very clear that North Carolina, the United States, doesn't have proportional representation and doesn't have to. So if you say directly that that's what you want, courts are going to throw it out looking at precedent. But one of the things that the justices talked about, and this was especially true with Chief Justice Newby, he said, look, you know, what is your standard? Nothing that's been put forward before us says that there is some sort of standard that distinguishes what's permissible versus what is impermissible. The two attorneys who argued on behalf of the legislative defendants basically said the same thing. There's nothing that the plaintiffs have put forward before you shows you any kind of standard. And a couple of other interesting things about...
And of course, the original question is, if there was no standard, how can I be accused of violating it?
Right, exactly. And another thing that was very interesting, I think near the tail end of Phil Strack's argument, and he's one of the legislative defendants' attorneys, he said, beware of relying on computer simulations. He reminded the justices that that was basically the whole case. These maps put together by political scientists and mathematicians that say, here are a bunch of computer simulations. In some cases, it was trillions. And in other cases, it was maybe just thousands. But here are the simulations. Here is the map that the General Assembly drew. Here are these other maps. And look at how much of a partisan outlier it is. And then Phil Strack said, okay, well, here was their argument. Well, look at the maps that one of the plaintiffs in the case put forward that would be alternatives to these maps. In some cases, they call for the exact same things that the General Assembly did that was called a partisan outlier. And he said, do you really believe that the Democrats who want these alternative maps are going to have a pro-Republican part as a gerrymander, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think there was a couple things that concerned me about these arguments. One was that Anita Earls and maybe Mike Morgan, I think maybe that's a little more debatable, have basically tried to equate partisan considerations to race to make them equivalent. In other words, most blacks vote for Democrats, so therefore, if you draw the maps on a partisan basis, you are racially discriminating. That's a dangerous precedent. So let me tell you where I think we are and where we're going. I think Republicans are going to be disappointed. I don't think you could watch the argument and conclude anything other than the Democrats are preparing to throw these maps out. Now, what reasoning they use, we don't know. Was that your sense of it?
The only way that would not be true is if Justice Sam Jimmy Irvin IV doesn't go along with the other three Democrats. It seemed fairly clear, based on the questioning and the oral arguments, that Justice Anita Earls wants to make party affiliation a protected class, just like race. And if that's true, they would throw out the maps. As you suggested, Justice Mike Morgan had some concerns about the free elections clause and the fact that he thinks that that could be a way that the Supreme Court could get into this. So it sounds like he's open to it. Robin Hudson, another Democratic justice, said, well, shouldn't we go by the will of the people, which suggests that she likes what the plaintiffs are talking about.
And the other thing is she indicated that, well, maybe we shouldn't set a standard. Maybe there should be no standard, but you just violate it and then the legislature has to figure it out on her own. That seems to be very dangerous.
Right. But based on the questions that the fourth Democrat, Justice Jimmy Irvin, had, he seemed to be at least open to the idea of throwing out the maps. But he also didn't say as clearly as the other three did that he saw it as an open and shut case. I think the other three are definitely on that path. If he goes along with them, then of course that it'll be a 4-3 decision throwing out the maps. I think it was clear that Chief Justice Newby looked at this case and said, look, there's no clear standard. How, even if we agreed with you that these maps were extreme, how could we set a standard? The General Assembly has to have some standard to work with. If it doesn't, then we're violating separation of powers by basically legislating how this process should go.
Now, there was interesting that, and you and I discussed this a little bit offline, there was a standard suggested by Governor Cooper and Attorney General Stein in a brief.
And it was referenced during the oral arguments.
And it was referenced in the oral arguments. Again, we're not advocating this, and it is my position that I wrote this, that it requires an extreme Supreme Court to throw out these maps because of extreme partisan considerations. But what's interesting to me is the standard put forward by Attorney General Stein and Governor Cooper would work similar to what is known as the variance on population. In the legislative districts, while you have to be close in the number of people in each state house district and each state Senate district, there's a variance of about 5% either way. So, you know, one district could have 4% less and another district have 4% more. And so there's variance there. And that's the kind of standard they said, you know, basically the court should require the adoption of the computerized mean of the maps and then allow some small variance of this. It's interesting that we ran the numbers on this and we found that it didn't make a whole lot of difference, that if they went by that standard, it would require the legislature to go back and draw probably a 9-5 congressional map, 9 Republicans and 5 Democrats, when the current one is probably 10 Republicans. It would probably require drawing a state Senate map that draws one more seat guaranteed for the Democrats. But that would still probably only get him 21 out of 50 and maybe 2 or 3 state house seats, but well below a majority. And so if you look at it and the differences are that small, then you go, well, is it really extreme to begin with?
Yeah. In fact, that was a point made directly by Phil Strack saying, look, you know, if you look at the maps and what is enacted and what has been proposed as an alternative, you're talking about the difference of 1, 2, maybe 3 seats in some respects, but not enough for something to be labeled extreme. And I think that just points out how tough it is to come up with a standard that says this amount of partisanship is okay, this amount of partisanship is extreme. Where's the line? There is no line, and no one's been able to find a line.
And basically, that takes you out of the realm of judging to legislating, and that was the argument. So I think we're going to have to redraw the maps. The Republicans are. What kind of standard is set? I don't know. I think Republicans will have to take some kind of haircut. Then there'll be some other questions. Do they appeal to federal court? Do they comply? Does the court appoint a special master, which is basically an independent person, to come and draw districts? Do they appoint a special master, which I think they'll do at the same time they send the legislature back to draw maps, and will then the court pick one or the other? But I think the maps are going to be redrawn, but I'm not sure Democrats in the end, partisan Democrats, are going to be happy with the result because, A, it is a difficult political year for them, and their geography puts them at a great disadvantage.
Yeah, I think just one caveat to that, it isn't either or on having the General Assembly draw the maps or have a special master. You could combine them, which has been done in the past, where you take part of the legislature's map and then take part of the special master's map and then mash them together.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to keep you up to date on this and other activities with the Supreme Court as we continue our extreme injustice watch on the North Carolina Supreme Court. Thanks, everybody.
Extreme Injustice is an investigative project of the Carolina Journal and produced by the John Locke Foundation. It is written and hosted by me, Dallas Woodhouse, with adult supervision from our senior political analyst, Mitch Kokai. Creative design by Greg Dedug, with communication support from Brooke Medina. Donna King is the editor-in-chief of the Carolina Journal. Donald Bryson is the president of the John Locke Foundation, and Amy Cook is the publisher and CEO. For this story's latest development, please visit carolinajournal.com and extremeinjustice.com. Follow us on Twitter at Carolina Journal. To support this and other work of the John Locke Foundation, please visit johnlocke.org as we continue to expose extreme injustice.